Hi, this is David Perdue from the Niche Affiliate Marketing System and MindAmps.com. And today we are talking about storytelling work, about the storytelling workshop. This is the storytelling workshop, and the subtitle on this is Discovering the Secrets of Creating Cash with Your Story. Now, I'm a big believer that your story and your life is your fodder for your online content. And it's really important for you to understand that as an online marketer, in many ways, you're going to be revealing yourself out there somewhere. We're going to talk about that a little bit. You have to build a relationship with your customers. And the only way to build your relationship is to get them to know you a little bit. Now, I've had 22 years total in the news business. I haven't done that for many years, but I was a trained journalist. I got my degree from Indiana University, one of the top journalism schools in the country. And one of the things that I was talking about earlier today is this inverted triangle that you see here. This is my own version of the famous inverted triangle that's used in the news publications. When I was in the newspaper business, it was right after type was cold type, I mean, was implemented. And what that means is that people would lay out the pages, and the most important information would be at the top. That's your lead, where we have hook written here. And the least important information was at the bottom, and that was, you know, just as you went through the story, you would put the least important at the bottom, because as it was laid into the newspaper, they would cut from the bottom if it didn't fit. And it was all about putting the right amount of copy in the newspaper column inches. So that's what the inverted triangle is about. More information at the top, least information at the bottom. Now, in our business, though, online, we want to make sure that you're getting as much information as possible, but the bottom is not the least important part. It's all kind of interwoven. In this workshop, we're going to today, in this two-hour session, we're going to talk about how to use structure to build your content. I've already alluded to that a little bit. How to find relevant stories in every corner of your life. We're going to dig into this seven-step story structure in detail, and it works every time. You just have to be sure you do it every time. Now, we're also going to model these good stories through imitation. We're going to model good stories through imitation. And we're going to show you some and talk about some today. Now, these stories can be used in email. They can be used in article writing. They can be used in your sales pages. They can be used in your About You page. They can be used as blog posts. It can be used everywhere. So that is kind of the key to what we're doing. We're building an entire content structure. How does this differ from what Jeff Herring teaches and some of the other content creation folks teach? It differs really a lot. It's in one way and not so much in another way. It's more of a mindset, more of a way of doing business than it is a big technology change or a big template change or those kind of things. What Jeff teaches is how to write articles in step fashion, but he doesn't teach you often with the container of it, what you're trying to do and how to engage. Now, I love Jeff's teaching, and Jeff is one of our primary teachers at the NAMS workshop, so I am not dissing any of that at all, because his content teaching style is great. And Jeff loves this as well. And I did a webinar for him on the story thing a while back. Some of you were on that. And he actually loves this seven-step approach, too, to creating that content structure. So we're going to talk a lot about that and how that fits in. Then we're going to talk about the language of stories. We're actually going to look at some of the writing, and I'll show you just a couple of paragraphs, or actually we'll look at one specific paragraph that I wrote a couple of days ago and how I beefed it up so that it was better for the story. And it's going to make some sense to you. Okay, so as I said, we're going to create a story on the spot using the structure that we're designing today. And this template is something that you're going to use over and over to sculpt your story as you go. It's very easy. It's not the kind of template that... It is a kind of plug-and-play template. It's not something that you will want to pull out every time and lay it down, because you want this to become your modus operandi, basically. You always want to think about how you're building your stories based on this structure that we are providing at the top in the inverted triangle. Then tomorrow, your assignment, by the way, at the end of the day, at the end of today, is to go out and build your own story using that structure. And don't get freaked out about it, because it's not a big deal. It is fairly simple when you use this template. And then you're going to polish it up and submit it on the website, on my website, mynams.com. I have a link for you to submit it to, and we will review it tomorrow in our two-hour session tomorrow, as well as some other samples that I have. So, parts of a profitable story. Yeah, Sandra says, life is so full of stories, which one to choose? Well, that's one of the problems when you understand where all of these stories are, because you can get into it in a big way and understand that you have a lot of choice out there. So this structure is fairly simple. The hook, none of these, by the way, are more important than the other, because they're all essential to doing what we want to do. And what we want to do is sell something. Now, that doesn't mean that you want to get money. It could be that you want to sell a point of view. You want to encourage people to opt into your list. It just means that you have a point, you have an action that you want them to take, and it is something that you want them to complete at the end of the story. So that's why we say that this is going to sell something. If you are selling a product, that's even that much better. And what we're going to do is go into that quite a bit. So the hook. The hook basically tells me why this is important now. And the setup is the next thing on this profitable triangle, story triangle. It's really the context for what this story is about. And then I've got something in here called parachute, which is dropping you into the action. It's a term that I learned a long time ago about doing presentations. And I don't always follow that rule about the parachute, but it's a good one to remember, which is that people don't really know, they don't really want to know the old presentation static format, which is tell them what you're going to do, tell them what it is, do it, and then tell them what you did. So you got three stages there. I'm going to do this. I'm doing this. Here's what I did. How boring is that? The parachute is dropping you right into the action and grabbing them. We are in a very fast-paced world. Things change all the time. People don't care about the buildup. They want to get right to it. So we're going to show you an example of that and a special way that I do of trying to jump into the action on things. And I use visuals a lot to help me see where the action is and how to get there quickly. Now, the next thing is the theme. This is the purpose of your article. This is the point of why you're writing this. And if you build your point last, which I did a couple of days ago, it doesn't work. I sent an email about my brother a couple of days ago, and I just started writing based on what on a visit that he had recently, and I just started kind of writing, and it didn't have a really clear point to it. So it wasn't one of my more successful story emails. I enjoyed it because I wrote about my brother, but I don't think anybody else did, and that wasn't the point. The point is not for me to enjoy it. The point was for me to communicate to other people. The transition. You want to make a transition from what you are writing about in your story, your life, to the action that you wanted them to take. Okay? So that is a really key thing here, because a transition can be very long, it can be very involved, but in any case, it has to be subtle. It can't just kind of be a jerk the rug out from under me and switch gears kind of thing, because then that's where you lose people. Then there's the sell. And the sell is all about the solution. This is where we have to focus on the solution to your problem that you're talking about in your story, and you go into that in a lot of detail. And then we have the tie back to the original hook. And the reason you do that is so that people understand that they are in a story and this is all comfortable and they know who you are. So That's how you can really sell people without being overbearing. And that's what we're into is subtle sales. Okay, so let's go to the next slide here. And this is where you're going to get the templates. I want you to go download these templates now. At nams.ws/ST1. I'll put these in the chat box, by the way, these links. Where is the chat box? There it is. nams.ws ST1. We're going to have, I think, four or five links today, and I'll put them all in here so you can click on them. And nams.ws/ST2 is the second template. But the sample template, pull that up, because we're going to go to a website, which is one of the very first websites that I built. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I did it pretty well. It is Bad Dad 10 Keys to Regaining Trust. This is one of my favorite sales pages I've ever written. And it is something that is really meaningful to me. And it turned out to be meaningful to a lot of people. So I was a pretty terrible father when I grew up, or when my kids grew up. And I was growing up too, as a matter of fact. So open your sample template, which is template 2, ST2. And you'll see those 7 points that I have laid out there from the inverted triangle that we're using. And we're going to go through this, and I'm going to show you how we built this page. And I did this basically via osmosis or intuition at that point, because I really didn't have this structure built out. I just had the way that I like to tell stories in my head. One of the benefits that I had to being a journalist was I didn't always write stories. I was a columnist. So columnists are always focused on I. And that's a good thing for an online marketer. You want to make sure that you're the center of your story, even if you're talking about other people. And we'll get to that in a second. So when you're selling a personal page like this one, Bad Dad 10 Keys to Regaining Trust, what I did was I wrote this book. And it was a very personal book about how I regained trust with my kids. I'm going to read the story down here a little bit, so I'm not going to go into it too much here. But the first thing I did up here was put this testimonial from Roger that said David Perdue held nothing back from his life experiences and miraculous turnaround in his ebook, Bad Dad. If you're a parent, as I am, you won't be able to stop reading David's story. If you desire to improve your family life, read Bad Dad and apply it every day. You and your kids will be glad you did. Okay, right here is the theme. If you desire to improve your family life, that's the point of Bad Dad. This is at bad-dad.com. And it's still up, and it still sells. And it so I'm tickled to sell it every day, because I really think it's an important story. So the way I started this sales page was basically tell them what they were going to get first thing, because I wanted them to see the 10 things, kind of get a taste of the 10 tips. These are the 10 keys in the book, inverted into questions, so that they or comments, so that they really understand where we're headed in that book. I don't give them the solution here, but I whet their appetite a little bit. Then I jump right down here to the story. It says, but I'm ahead of myself already. First, I want to tell you a story about a really bad day in my life. You may relate, if not to the details, probably the feelings. I hope you never go through this. Okay, so I'm using a lot of curiosity right there in the beginning of that story. I'm just kind of leading up to something that's really bad. Then the next paragraph pounds him in the head with, I thought telling the children that you and their mom were divorcing had to be the mother of all bad days. But it wasn't even close. It was just the beginning of the worst days to come. All right, so you know something terrible is happening here, because a divorce is not going to be the worst. And it was not the worst to me. It was the rest of this process, this family estrangement, all of this stuff that really happened. Now, this is all 100% true. This is pure, authentic me. So it is something that I really believe that you have to reveal yourself, not to an embarrassing point, but you have to be real and authentic online. Okay, so this is how it happened to me, and I say that this is me. Okay, so gathered in the kitchen, my wife and three kids sat around the table with a shaky voice. I whispered, "Your mother and I can't live together anymore because we don't love each other." My youngest son climbed into my lap as the two older children stood around with tears streaming down their face. He smiled, begging for approval, and said, "But you still love me, don't you, Daddy?" This is a four-year-old boy. Now, you can imagine that right there, right? And I tell you down here, as we both burst into tears, I squeezed him tightly to my chest. I didn't know how to help him. At 4 years old, he was feeling the trauma of his family. Okay, so I'm still hammering this point, which is the theme, right? The trauma of the family. So, and I tell you how we get there. So we're getting into some of the setup as well in this. And it's not as clear cut always as being able to say, this is the hook, this is the setup, this is the point, da, da, da. But it all kind of works together, and you identify it as you're going through it. The thing that you have to know, though, from the beginning is, what's your theme? What's the purpose? What's the point? So for years, the tension in the house had been so thick you could slice it. My anger and resentment toward my wife had been building while the kids tiptoed around the edge to avoid the abyss that we called our marriage. It was like living in a war zone, and they were the orphaned victims. Now, one of the things I'll also tell you is that I wrote this in 2005. And I probably edited it three or four times that year, and I've not touched it since. And I read it again yesterday for the first time in a long time, and I really wanted to get in there and edit it again. But I refrain from doing that, you know, unless I can see a conversion change. I want to make the point that perfection is not something we can afford. And so you're going to find things in here that are a little weird. For example, there's a sentence up here. Where is it? That I really kind of hate. I thought telling the children that you and their mom were divorcing had to be the mother of all bad days. That's a terrible sentence. A better sentence would have been telling your children But telling your children that you're divorcing their mom had to be the mother of all bad days. Of course, I didn't write it that well. So, but it's there now, and I didn't want to go back and re-edit the whole thing again. So once you get started editing, you're going to end up editing a lot more. Okay, so we're looking at the hook. We're looking at the if you're looking at your document in front of you, you know, I probably should pull that up myself and refer back to that. So Sandra, I said, perfection is not something we can afford. What do you mean by that? Sandra is asking. If you are going to do any writing, you will never, ever be perfect at it. In fact, I guarantee you, you'll never be perfect at anything. So the reason I say that that's important is that if you are trying to do perfection all the time, you're going to quit. That's my point. Okay, so on this template, first I want to, this is the hook. First I want to tell you the story about a really bad day in my life. I read that. The setup was, for years the tension in the house had been so thick. That's where I am now. And the parachute was gathered in the kitchen. My three kids sat around the table. That is the action. I mean, I put you right in the spot, right? And that's what we're trying to do with the writing that we accomplish when we're trying to persuade people to do something else. This is all about persuasion. This is exactly what we're doing, all about persuasion. Let's see. So as the kids grew into teenagers, we grew further apart. Oh, and I say right here, emotionally, I had checked out. Here's where the trouble is. Okay? After the divorce, I was no longer in the house. Oh, wait, I went too far. I want to come back up here because this sets up this, or still in the setup. This, I thought, is the worst failure of my life. I can't make this marriage work, and I don't have a clue how to help these kids feel better. Now, I was a young dad. I was 21 years old when we had our first child. I'd been married 2 years already at that point. So I got married when I was 19, and I was really a terrible father because I just didn't know how to be a dad. I barely knew how to be a son. So we're going to talk about a little bit about that, but not a lot. But everything is great now, and I'm going to show you when we get to the end how that all worked out. So all I knew is that my life was crumbling, my own pain was overwhelming, and that's all I could think about. Like most young dads, I had no training in parenting. The most important job in my life, raising my children, was a trial and error effort at best. So you can see that I am bolding some of these key things that I want the reader to, what do you call that? I want them to feel the same thing I'm feeling. I want them to identify with these things. If somebody's reading this and they're identifying with this, then these bold phrases really are going to jump out at them. And I'll tell you an interesting thing about my market. Empathize. Thank you, Stan. That was the word, empathize. What I thought was I was writing a sales letter and a book for fathers. It ended up that my market was women. They were the ones who were seeing this. Fathers who are in this position don't usually see it until it's too late. And that was an interesting thing that I learned just based on the feedback I got from the sales. So after the divorce, I was no longer in the house. I was a failure. My kids didn't need to be around a failed dad, I thought. So I only showed up when required. School functions, ball games, and the occasional movie. I'm still setting it up. You're seeing the problem develop. Emotionally, I had checked out. Work became my identity. That's when the real trouble started. Here is a hard transition. That's when the real trouble started. That tells you that this is when I'm going to reveal what the worst days were. As the kids grew into teenagers, we grew farther apart. They no longer wanted to be around me. At the same time, they built great anger and resentment. After all, they'd learned that from the best. But anger and resentment turns to self-destruction. I watched as my kids began having trouble in school, sneaking out of the house, and displaying angry, disrespectful outbursts toward their mom. The young son, now I was at that point, had angry, disrespectful outburst as well toward their mom. So they were learning that from me, and I didn't put that in here, but I did say up here that that they learned from the best. So that gives you a hint at what's going on there. The young son, who wanted so much to be loved, would find himself in drug rehab at 16. Now that is, if you're a dad or a mom, that's a knife through the heart right there. That's a parent's worst nightmare, a child on drugs. If you don't understand why you must change your life after checking your child into drug rehab, then you're not ready for bad dad. What am I saying? I'm saying this book is for you because you have to be able to understand this nightmare and that it can happen to anybody. Sorry to have wasted your time, but if you feel a little twinge of recognition in your gut, or you want to check your behavior patterns to ensure you're not making the same mistakes, keep reading. So to this point, this story is building up to the point where it should be scaring you if you're a parent. Now, at this point in my life, I was terrified. And so I tapped that emotion as I was going through this and really brought it back. Here's the transition. We're going back over to our thing here. So this says after the divorce, the theme is after the divorce, I was no longer in the house. I was a failure. My kids didn't need to be around me. That's when the trouble started. And this was all about being gone. And the point of the book is that you can reconstruct your life and change it. And that is the theme that Roger pointed out in Improving Family Life. So it really is this paragraph that really drives home the point that I'm trying to make. The transition is that something is missing in your life. Chances are it's you. That's the next sentence here, I believe. Sorry. Yeah. Is this you, your brother, or your sister, or a close friend maybe? So do you see somebody here? I'm asking you as the reader, do you see somebody here in this story so far? Most people can point to somebody in their life that they say, oh boy. Exactly. Something is missing in your child's life. Chances are it's you. That is where we make the hard transition from me to you. Listen, I understand. I feel your pain. Believe me. You're scared, angry, and hopeless. I'm talking to you now as the reader. All up to this point, it's been me. And I'm now talking directly to you because if you've read this far, you've already empathized. You have the best of intentions to have a pleasant conversation and a peaceful interaction with your kids, but soon you're arguing again. Hurtful things are said, and the gulf between you becomes even wider. If that rings true for you, it's time for a new plan. Your old plan doesn't work any longer. The first was to ignore it, hoping the pain would go away. That didn't work so well. The next plan seemed logical. If talking only drives the kids further away, then don't talk. Maybe if we just wait until they're grown and try it again then. So that was the solution that didn't work, right? I'm talking about the problem. I tried all these things. This was the solution that didn't work. And that was another bad idea. So there's got to be a solution, right? We're heading toward a solution. The transition is taking us toward the solution. If I come back over here, we see that we're in the cell at this point. Okay, so we're talking about the transition and the cell. So we are slowly building our way into the cell. And the cell for me is I wanted to buy the book, right? That's the point of this entire sales page and this entire story. So I'm identifying with them. I'm telling them there's a solution and we're moving forward. Now, I've told them that all of the solutions I tried to that point didn't work. And I haven't told them what the solution is yet. At the very beginning, I kind of gave them a hint that there is a solution, but I haven't really gone into the solution itself. So bad relationships fester in venom, creating cancer that robs us of our joy and our right minds. No longer can we make judgments that are clear and confident. I'm punching that problem a little bit more. I'm really digging it in there so you can feel it. No one likes living in this situation and no one is in control, but everyone thinks they are. Before you run off screaming, oh my God, it's hopeless, let me give you three reasons to stay with me here. And this is important. My three kids are, my sweet daughter rarely talks about the days when she avoided me because of my explosive temper. It's still too painful. But now she says, I live an enriched, fulfilled, happy life. Fun, loving, I live an enriched, fulfilling, happy, fun life, and Dad taught me how to do that. He taught me to take what you have, a life that you hate, and turn it into a dream come true. It may have taken me a while, but I'm here now, and he gets the credit. Okay, that's pretty good. Seems like there is a solution coming here. The second one is my oldest son, who always tried to tell me the story he thought I wanted to hear, which often was a lie. Throughout my life, my dad was always the last one to know. I would avoid telling him things because I was afraid of disappointing him. What I eventually did was leave him out altogether. It was when I took my beautiful bride-to-be to meet him that I finally understood. After all those years, I was always afraid of the wrong thing. Not including him ultimately hurt us both. Okay, there's a second piece of the solution there from my son. And the third one, who is the one who was in drug rehab, says, there were sometimes when I really didn't feel comfortable around you because I didn't know what you were going to do next. You were just so angry that you scared me. The only way that I felt I could get over the hurt of it was to make myself not care, and the drugs really helped with that. I know that I have I know that I have done and still do some things to really upset you and make you angry, but you still tell me you love me. And that is it. That is what a good father does. No matter what, you will love me and you will make sure that I know that. Okay, so that shows you that I have reached a solution, that I have gotten to the place where things are good. Things are much better with these kids, right? So 15 years ago, and I'm going to push on that a little bit in this story as well to make sure that you understand that we had a big problem. We worked the problem. The problem was hard. The problem was difficult. Now there's a solution. The solution, I figured out the solution. I've got the secrets. I understand how to make this work, and it's worked for me. And so I talk about it a little bit more here, and then I jump down here, and I say before that I'm going to compare, give you a picture to show you. Before, on the left, shows my angry, depressed children with their angry, depressed dad at one of the most wonderful locations in the world, Disney World. These are my kids right here. They are not smiling. They're not having fun. They don't want to be there at Disney World with me. That was just me and the kids about 6 months after the divorce. Here is the kids about probably 10 years later on the back porch of my house. And everything is getting good, back to normal almost there. So after 15 years of struggle, we're getting into the solution here. We're moving into the cell pretty hard at this point. We trust each other. We do the right thing, not always the easy thing. We enjoy respect. When both of my sons call from different parts of the world, they live where they live with their wives, they say, "I love you, Dad," before they hang up. That is what you want to hear, right? How about you? Have you heard "I love you" lately from your kids? Wouldn't you like to? First, I say that this is not a magic pill. Then I'm getting into the solution completely. That's true for the bad dad, 10 keys to regaining trust. It is not a magic pill. But if you read it and do what's in here and work on changing yourself, use this as a catalyst to change yourself is basically what I'm saying, then this is the beginning of it. 10 miles in, 10 miles out. That's an old story that you may have heard, that if you go 10 miles into the woods, it's still 10 miles out. So I had 10 years of estrangement from children. It took me 10 years to rebuild those relationships. Let's see. Then I really just go into the cell quite a bit here and what you get in the book and all of that. I kind of go off the track here in the sales letter a little bit and talk about how important it is for this parenting thing to be better and for it to work and for you to how it affects the world. And then I come back to what Bad Dad 10 Keys is and how to rebuild your relationship with your children. And then I give some testimonials about it. And then I talk about how you can go through what I went through, or you can change completely. And that's how I ended this sales letter with the buy button down here. I went through some bonuses in and some reports about raising kids that I actually created. That go in with this, and then there's the buy button down here with the whole deal. It leads right up to that. So I tied it all back together with in this area. Let's see, where's the tie? Let me go back over here. And after 15 years of struggle, honest, hard work, undying love and commitment, and a rock-solid devotion to the 10 secrets contained in Bad Dad's 10 Keys to Regaining Trust, my kids are shown. Okay, so the tie was the pictures and tying that all back together before we get into the real hard sell there. Okay? I don't want to spend a lot more time on this sales letter, but you see how the story takes structure and how the template works. That's what I want you to see, is how you can build this template to build key paragraphs, use the template to build key paragraphs so that you can actually write something that makes sense to you and accomplishes the goal that you wanted to accomplish. Now that we've gone through the bad dad, and we've gone through that entire thing from the template perspective, I want you to understand that you can tell that was a very very personal story for me. So it was pretty scary to write that story. It was pretty scary to put that out there as my revealing myself that much. And it's never been, I've never really had any problem since it, since doing that, because it is, it was so much in the very beginning and it was so raw and I was able to write that and get it done. So I have not revealed myself as much since that first time, but I reveal myself a lot more than most people do. Now, you see that all the time in my writing with the emails and the blog post. I talk about where we live a lot. I talk about my wife a lot. I talk about my kids a lot. I talk about my family situation with visiting my parents and where they live and how we work and what we do and all of that. And it is, it works its way into my stories a lot. So I encourage you to get personal as much as you can. One of the things I want you to do, and you're going to come up on it here pretty quick, I think, is to identify the things that you have been good at, the problems that you've solved in your life. We all have problems that we've solved. And it's not really about choosing a niche. It really is about the personal problems that you've overcome in your life. And then you figure out how to relate those to the niche that you're in. You know, if you're a scrapbooker, for example, you don't have to always be talking about the problems of scrapbooking. You can be talking about the problems of living and how you overcame those. You have problems that you've overcome in your life, and you can actually use those to be able to build a purpose to your writing that will help you make more sales, help you accomplish more actions, help you in the primary goal of your own writing online, which is to shorten that road to building relationships with your community. And I hesitate to call it the people on your list because they are a lot more than that. They are your community. And to build the to build that relationship is the only way that you're going to make more and more sales, more and more money, and have that community take care of you as an online business. So, you know, it comes down to know, like, trust. We all know that phrase, know, like, trust. Knowing, getting people to know you is the first step, and it's a really important step. Now, if I send you a note every day that says, here, buy this, here, buy this, here, buy this, you're not getting to know me at all. If I send you a note like I did about my brother, that I did a couple of days ago, about my brother who visited last weekend, and about how he was 6 years younger than me. We didn't really get to know each other very well when I was growing up because I left when I was 17. That was a pretty good way for you to get to know me. It didn't accomplish what I wanted to accomplish, which was sell a lot of product, because I lost my focus as I was writing that article. I lost the focus of what the purpose of the writing was, because it was, I got caught up in telling you about me and my brother. I didn't relate it to the action that I wanted you to take. I hope that makes sense to you. So sometimes it's going to be, trial and error, and sometimes you'll go back and use the same story and put a different spin on it, and that'll work better. But it's always about focusing on the solution first. Yeah, ironically, it was for this storytelling webinar. Yeah. Now, it was, it did accomplish some things that I wanted to accomplish, but it didn't drive the kind of sales for this storytelling webinar that I wanted to do. Now, you know, I could lie to you and tell you that that was one of my great success stories. It wasn't. I have had a lot of success stories in the storytelling world. We're going to talk about some of those as well. Actually, we're going to talk about yours more than mine. So the final piece of that know, like, trust thing is help. That's the important part. That's the part that gets lost in translation. People don't understand that the way to get people to know, like, and trust you is to help them a lot. And that's the important part that I want you to remember, is that if you're helping people, they're going to know you, like you, and trust you. But it's always better when you understand the value of being open with your readers. Okay, so if you are a scientist, Charlie, you may know about this. If you are a scientist or a doctor, or you studied psychology or whatever, you may know about the Johari window. The Johari window is a quadrant system for identifying how people relate with each other and about their personality. I think this is an important thing to understand. And I've adapted it to my own use. So if you think that I'm using it a little differently than it's intended, you're probably right. So the Johari window has four quadrants. They're the same quadrants, left and right across the top, and vertically, top and down. And it is known to me, unknown to me, known to you, unknown to you. So the difference is me and you, right? It's all about who knows what. It's Sandra asked, what is the, it's about how people relate to each other, and I said personality types, understanding your personality type, Sandra. So known to me, this is what I know about myself. What we both know at this time, if it's in this window, this is what I know about myself. And I will take, the way the Johari window was built was that you would take, I think it was 56 personality adjectives, and you pick and choose the adjectives and you drop them into the categories about yourself. So, for example, I know that I am a late night person. I have a biological clock that starts at about 9 in the morning and ends about 1 o'clock or 2 in the morning. And that's just the way my makeup is. I've been that way since I was a kid. And when I try to go to bed early, it doesn't work for me. I know that about me. Okay. Now that I've told you, you know that about me. So that goes into the open box right here. That's what's known to me and known to you. This is quadrant one. The unknown to me, called blind, is quadrant two. It works in a clockwise sequence. The unknown to both of us is quadrant three. And the known to me, unknown to you is quadrant four. Now we're going to go around these in the circle and talk about them for just a second here. So category, quadrant two is the blind category, is the blind quadrant. Now the reason it's called blind is because you know this about me, but I don't know it about me. So, for example, let's see if I can think of something. Well, it's really going to be hard for me to think of something since I don't know it about me, right? So you know something about me already. And let's just say that you know that I am, that I have a stutter. Let's say you know I have a stutter, but I've never noticed that I have a stutter, right? And I don't know how you would do that, but let's just say that. I have a stutter, but it irritates you. It doesn't irritate me. Let's say that. Okay, so that's something that you know about me, and I have a blind spot about that. That is a thing that I don't know about myself, and if I knew it, maybe it would help me. If I didn't know it, maybe it doesn't hurt me. Maybe I'm okay not knowing it. But when you hear about consultants who go into corporate situations and they're brought in to figure out how to solve a problem, they always kind of look at these things, what's known and what's unknown, and who knows it, who doesn't know it. And consultants often say, I don't know what I don't know yet. And that makes complete sense when you are trying to solve a problem, because you want to know what you don't know so that you can find the solution, and it may live in this blind spot. Now, we're just talking in this case about know, like, trust. So if you know something about me that is irritating, and I don't change it, you're going to go away. So I'm always trying to figure out what you know about me so that I can fix it and move it into this known to me category. Because if it's in the open category and we can talk about it, whatever it is, and we can talk about it, then this old saying, you know, the sunshine is a great disinfectant. If it's in the open, we can really get it out in the open and talk about it, and it doesn't become so irritating or so ugly, right? Now, if you're married, you know this. I mean, you're always talking to each other about what the other person maybe doesn't know, and you got to really be careful to make sure that you're telling somebody something they want to know. So I don't tell people things about themselves unless they ask me. But if they ask me, then we move it into the known to me and known to you category, from quadrant two to quadrant one, because that's where good things live, in quadrant one. Quadrant three is the unknown to me and unknown to you. Neither of us really knows this about me. I don't know what that would be, because it's completely unknown to both of us. But there's something going on there that neither of us can put our finger on, right? I mean, sometimes you meet somebody and you say, just doesn't gel with me. I just don't get that guy. I just don't understand what it is about him, but it really bothers me. And that really doesn't ever get resolved. It's pretty much the kind of system where you just, or the kind of attribute where you just give up on it. And you can go through exercises where that is even revealed. Now, we have I'm very involved in a spiritual center, and the spiritual center kind of practices in this unknown to all of us. And we talk about things that is unknown to all of us. And we focus on that area so that we build a common bond and really bring out ideas and opportunities that maybe are triggered. Maybe somebody says something and it builds on itself. So this can then become move from here to the known between the two people, but it's really difficult. This is a tough thing to nail down, because people don't even know what to start talking about in this area. Quadrant four is hidden. Now, this is what we call the private space. So this is known to me, but I'm not telling you. I've got my secrets, right? Yeah, politicians. Charlie says this is where the politicians live. Yeah, that is exactly right. Politicians they don't want you to know everything about them. I mean, they want you to see the facade that they leave out there. We all say, I want to present an image. Well, when you're presenting an image, you're living in the quadrant four. Let's see. Brian, you say that this can be used to engage the person and lead to conversation and growth for both of you and your audience. Make them feel more connected. Are you talking about the unknown quadrant three or quadrant four, the hidden, or both of those, Brian? Number three, yes, it's true. You can have some really good conversations about the unknown. That's absolutely true, Brian. I think quadrant four is kind of a dead zone, because if it is known to me and not known to you, and I don't want you to know it, I don't want to move it up here, you're never going to know it. And that is my protected area, and everybody's got one. So just understand that you have some things that you don't want to reveal, because it's going to hurt your relationship, believe it or not. It can hurt your relationship. So protect that area. You want to put as much into this quadrant one as possible, though, in your story writing. Let's take a look at that. So in a trust situation, you're focused here. The blind, the unknown, and the hidden really become smaller issues in your world. When you are doing online marketing, I think this up here actually had a tag up the top one time that said consumer and producer. So consumer and producer, this is the person reading, this is the person selling, or this is the person using the software, this is the person building the software. This is the doctor, this is the patient, you know. And so if you are talking about things in the open space, you're building relationship. So you want to spend as much time with your community in this open space as possible. And that is how you build the trust relationship. So we're getting from know, like, trust. You've progressed by enlarging this open area in the know. And as you reveal yourself to people, more than likely they begin to like you more because the barriers come down and they identify with you and they empathize with you. If they do that, then they begin to trust you and you can start selling them your products or bringing them to your point of view or whatever that is. Does this make sense to you? Have you seen this? Do you see how this works in your world? Okay. Where do you find ideas to write about? It's really easy, I think. You just have to be open to doing it. So you have a past, a present, and a future. And I like to say that the past, if you look at this picture, it's going to be hard for you to see on the live view, but this is a picture of Purdue's grocery. This is my grandfather's grocery that was torn down in the mid-60s, actually mid-70s, but it was kind of the family hub, and it really built the entire kind of the viewpoint that my entire family grew up with. Self-sufficient, rural, storytelling. I've told this story before that this is where I learned storytelling, was listening to my grandfather talk to people about their lives, basically. And he was a big gun and knives tradesman. So he would not only make money from the grocery, which my grandmother mostly ran, but he would also trade knives and guns so that he made extra money that way. And he would do it through telling stories. So people were in there every day sitting around the Potbelly stove in this little place, and he would trade knives and guns and sometimes get the same knives and guns back and in his trades, but he always made money. It was like trading stocks in some ways. So in the past, you're talking about trauma, because we have a lot of trauma in our past. Things happen. And who was it? Mark Twain always said that, you know, many terrible things have happened in my life. Many terrible things have happened in my life. Let's see, how does that go? Many terrible things happened to me. Most of them were in my imagination. That is, we all try to make our problems bigger than they really were. That's just kind of a human nature thing. Ask somebody how they're doing and they're going to tell you what hurts. So we all have trauma. We all have family. And we all have lessons from those things. We can, what is it, hindsight is 20/20. We can look back on those things and see what we should have done differently, what we learned from it. And those are things that we can use in our writing to actually help us build a story that creates an arc to where we are today. So that's the last thing. The last bullet here is from there to here. How did I get from that place to where I am now? How did I build on that trauma? How did I get over that family situation? The point is, in this past, is that I am human and I understand what you've gone through. That is the empathy that we need to bring to this. That is the that's how we relate to people from our past. It's not that we wallow in our past. If you don't get beyond your past, then nobody's going to want to read it. This is where the complainer lives. Well, he lives here and in the present. The complainer is somebody who is just going to say, woe is me, woe is me. Things are really sucking my life and, you know, it never gets better. If you're that pessimistic, if you have that kind of thing that consumes you, then you're going to have a difficult time relating to people and going through that know, like, trust. You will for a little while. I spent 2 years with a friend who was maybe the most negative friend in the world during my bad dad days. And I actually had to end that friendship because it was not helping me grow. And one of the things that you have to do is decide who you're going to be around and who you want to emulate. And you can actually, I mean, we could turn that into a story right away. So you just look back at those experiences and learn the lesson. The lesson I learned from that was that the more I was around that person, the more negative I became, and I didn't like it. The reason I left the newspaper business was that after 17 years of the newspaper business, I came home every day angry. And because I immersed myself in the news and thought that the news was real. The news is not real. The news is just the daily facts as people interpret them that day. Doesn't mean that it's bad or good, but if you're in the middle of the newspaper business, it is all bad all the time. And I had to get out of it because it was killing me. The present is also about trauma. Stuff happens. It's also about family. But the present is about dreams, too. Dreams and goals. What do you want to happen in your life? And what do you want to, how are you achieving your dreams and goals? And what are the daily challenges that that make up your daily living that either hinder you or that you overcome that help you achieve those dreams? I mean, the present is what we're living in. That is the only time that we have. And when you are highly involved in what's going on in your life today, the thing that you realize really quickly, I think, is that you can only change what's happening right now. Now, you can make plans, but if you don't adjust based on what's happening right now, those plans will go away. You'll never achieve them. So if you focus on where your goals are, what your dreams are, what the daily challenges are, and how you're adjusting to those things, then you've got stuff to write about. I try to live in this column as much as possible in the now, because this is where I find that happiness lives. If I'm here and focused on what's going on now, I don't worry so much about what happened in my life in the past, and I don't worry so much about where I'm going and how to get there. The thing that I always like to say is that I've never had a problem in my life, and people look at me really crazy because I don't believe that's true. They don't believe that's true. I believe that I've never had a problem in my life because everything that happened to me got me where I am. If anything had changed, I would not be where I am now, and I love where I am now. So all of those problems were just challenges that I overcame, I worked around, I figured out solutions to, or I got help with. And I can write about every one of those experiences as a lesson. That's where you can, I mean, if you start writing down your past experiences, and we're going to do this in just a minute. If you start writing down your past experiences and your the problem that you had and what the solution was, you've got story material. And you can relate it to whatever niche you're in, I guarantee you. Okay. Third column is future. You notice I got palm trees there. I see the Florida beach in my life in the future. My wife and I go to a place in Florida twice a year. We spend about 6 weeks a year down there. And I love the beach, and we love this town, and we love where we go. I see us retiring there. I could have put a football picture up here because I see us retiring in Tuscaloosa, too, in Alabama, because my wife is such a huge football fan. And we love Alabama football. We love Alabama sports. We love Alabama people. And it's a great place for us to live. So I see us retiring in both of those places someday. Now, I don't have a clue what retirement is. I don't understand at all how I will stop working. I don't think I will. I don't see that in my future. But the important part here is that the dreams that I'm having over here in the present translate into my future if I have a plan for getting there. Those dreams, goals, vision. I'm a big believer in seeing where you're headed. In seeing a vision, in really understanding it and feeling it. And we talked in the past about from there to here. How did I go from there to here? In the future, it's important to talk about how I'm going from here to there. Okay? You really want to say, I'm here today. 10 years, I'm going to be there. My wife and I, on New Year's Eve, every year, sit with our list of what we want to accomplish next year, what we've accomplished in the last year. And often it's about 60-70% comes true. And we don't look at the list all the time. It's just setting that tone from a vision standpoint. Now, that's a story. I've written about that several times because it is always about how I'm going to get from here to there. And then I check in at the end of the year, and I usually write something at the end of the year about how we did. You can do the same thing about your vision, your goals, and your dreams, and what you're doing to get there. And it also helps you, by the way, accomplish those things if you're focused on them and writing about them. So the point about the future is we all have somewhere to go. How do we do it? These are things that you can easily be open about, right? I mean, there's stuff in my family past that I'm just not going to tell you because it's embarrassing, and it is more embarrassing than my bad dad stuff even. But it is, you know, goes back generations, and I'm just not going to talk about it. But it does help me understand that family past is a base that I've built my stories on. Okay. So, I think on the next page, I think we start getting into, we'll go back to this structure. And what I want you to do right now, come back up to the past, present, and future, and I want you to take a couple of minutes and write down on a piece of paper. Get a piece of paper out or get on your computer or whatever it is and write down five story ideas from your past based on trauma, family, lessons you learned, and how you got from here there to here. And just write down one sentence, the kind of things that you think you could build into stories. Then I want you to do the same thing for each of these columns. You should make three columns, and you can write one through five and just jot them down very quickly. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to do this, okay? So do that now. And then when you're done, I want you to post a few of your ideas in the question box here when you're done. Okay? Start now. I'll give you 2 minutes. Okay. I'm back, and it's been a couple of minutes, and let's see what we have here. Brian says, Brian, you didn't say this as one of your story ideas, but this is a story idea. Brian said he's at Prince Edward Island in the summer in Florida in the winter. Ah, life is good. Now, that right there tells me that there's a story there, Brian, that we would like to hear at some point about how you got from here to there. And that would be a great story idea. Take a story from the past and then talk about the future. You could do that. You could tie it all together, Sandra. That's not necessarily what I was talking about, but you could do that. You can go from here to there in them. But I'm really talking about building a story in the past, present, or future. So you can really just take a life event and build stories around it. Teresa says, keeping secrets, telling lies, 26 ways to survive a completely dysfunctional family, already working on this. Good, Teresa. That is a good, and by the way, the story idea that you put in can always end up being your headline. The genesis of your story idea can always end up being a working title that helps you. So really what you're doing here is just creating story concepts that you'll build later. So start putting your ideas in the question box here. Stan says, overcoming SOS. Not sure what that means, Stan. In the I am niche, overcoming SOS. Overcoming help? Emergencies? I don't know what you mean there, Stan. You might elaborate on that a little bit. The next one from Stan is in the health niche, overcoming cancer and not letting blindness hold me back from being successful. Okay, there's a story. Let's see. And Stan, you say, I am struggling to think of another three, though. So go back to this past. Trauma, family, lessons from here to there. Think of family members and what happened with a family member. We're looking for ideas. That's all at this point. So it doesn't have to be any big concept. You know, like my brother visited on Sunday, turned into a story. The beavers cut down a tree beside my house. That turned into a story. Cat climbed up a tree and wouldn't come down. That turned into a story that was one of my most successful. Let's see. Brian, actually, this is a note from Brian, but it could be a story as well. I have a roofer who just arrived. I'll be right back. So, you know, what do you do when a roofer arrives in the middle of your webinar? I mean, that could end up being a story. Everything can end up being a story. Let's see. Sandra writes, she traveled abroad. I thought it was impossible. I was a poor student researcher, found a solution. I have now lived in four different countries, and she lives on the French Riviera, a dream that is possible. So, Sandra, that is a great story that people would love to hear, going from here to there, and it would be very revealing about yourself and how you did that, and educational to people. That'd be great. Chris says, going from knowing virtually nothing about cancer into helping a friend conquer it. By learning everything I could and teaching her and giving 24/7 moral support, going from knowing virtually nothing about cancer into helping a friend. Oh yeah, that's you copied that twice. Okay. Teresa, it says, ask me how I know. How I know your. Does that mean ask you about how you know what about your story concept? Which was keeping secrets, telling lies, 26 ways to survive a completely dysfunctional family. Ask me how I know. I think we can guess that. Chris says overcoming depression, situation-based, not chemical depression. Ute says my grandmother, I only knew her as not liking us. I thank her every day today because she taught me not to... about what not to do. I think that's what you're saying there, Ute. And then you say another story is about being an intentional grandma. Okay. Stan writes down the shiny object syndrome. Oh, that's SOS. Got it. Overcoming the shiny object syndrome. That's a good story. Enduring many years in a warped religion. That's Chris. Making bread from that on my own and creating my own life out of the ashes of having everything I had come to believe turn out to be complete lies. Okay, there's a big story there. That would be a revealing story. Seeing a need for a specific type of animal rescue and starting that on my own. Wow. From the ground up and running it over 10 years. That's a great one, Chris. Charlie, you write, lost my temper while waiting at a green light. Person wasn't even going, though they had the right of way. I was so angry. Shortly after, I ran into someone else at another stoplight. Anger management is a story. Yep, that's a big story. Let's see. Sandra, divorcing in France, alone with three kids, how to deal with it in a different country. That's a good one. Yeah, so, let's see, Charlie says he's having problems with ideas for the future, lessons learned. Okay, so the future can present you some problems. I mean, the future is, like I said, I don't spend a lot of time there. But when we want to talk about, here's an example. I'll give you two examples, actually. Today is... July the 19th, August the 12th, that's in less than a month. August the 12th is my wife's 10th anniversary of cancer cure. She had a surgical cure, and she went through an incredible scary period where we didn't know what that was. But it turned out to be a cure for her. So that gives me a couple of ways to write about it, right? One is I can actually do the entire arc from past 10 years ago, what it was like to go through that fear, to how we've changed our lives and lived the way we live now based on learning from that fear, to what we will do on August the 12th to celebrate 10 years of additional life and how great life's today and what we want it to be in the future and how we've dealt with that. And so that's really three different stories. That could be written as a series even if I wanted to. And it would be one way to do that. So that is based on a past incident. So let's not do that based on a past incident. Let's do another one. This is the second idea about future. So, okay, so let's see. I want a boat. I see myself owning a sailboat, a big one, I'd say 30 to 40 feet, in Florida and being able to spend a lot of time on the sailboat. I have no idea what that's like. I have never been on a sailboat, but I have this idea that I want to do that. So I'd have to write about that from a perspective of, here's what my vision is for living on a sailboat. How would I go from here to there? How would I understand what it's like? Now, I'm not going to go out and buy a $200,000 sailboat and go out and on the first day and think, well, okay, now I'm on the sailboat, so I would have to learn it all at once. There's probably a process that I would go through, right? I probably want to go out on sailboat with somebody who does it. I hear there's a lot of work that goes into living on a sailboat or spending a lot of time on a sailboat, for example, overnight or whatever. What are the pitfalls? Yeah, this is kind of a dream that I have, but I can guarantee you that I probably don't have the stamina for doing this. I probably don't have the courage to do it, and I definitely don't have the ability at this point to take off in my life and go do that. So that, to me, is a thing in the future where it was just an idea, just a dream. How would I investigate that? Now, how do I relate that to my community? So that dream, that goal, that vision, I could talk about the sailboat thing. And I could say, how am I going to get from here to there? My community is the Mine Ams community. So I can say, you're probably going through something similar with your dream. What is your dream? Is your dream to be financially independent, to be to understand completely how to have your own business online? If that's your dream, then you need to follow these same procedures in discovering if this is right for you. So you talk to people. You talk to people who are doing what you're doing. You see if it's a right fit for you. What tools do you need? How do you implement this stuff? How long does it take? I had a psychologist one time who was a friend of mine who we talked a lot about how he built his practice. And he said that building his practice took 7 years. Everybody told him when he started it would take 7 years. And he said, I just told them they were liars and that I could do it in 3 years. And he said it took me 7 years because there is a natural arc to all of this. And he said, if I'd known it was going to take me 7 years, then I probably wouldn't have done it the way I did it. I wouldn't have jumped into everything. My point about that is there are things we can learn from each other to help us move our dreams forward. So you can relate your dream to your community in some way. And what you do is you tell them about yourself, and you are then incorporating something for them. It's that switch from I to you. That's the important part of storytelling, is the switch from I to you. There's a lot of I in your story. And then when you go through the transition, there's a lot of you. Okay. So this is a good job. You guys wrote up some pretty good things here to do do stories about. And you've got some ideas now. So hang on to that piece of paper. And we will develop that further because you're going to be writing stories toward the end here. We've got about, let's see, we've got about 40 minutes left to get through the rest of this today. Okay, we're back to the inverted structure, inverted pyramid structure, the hook, the setup, the parachute, the theme, the transition, the cell, and the tie. Let's see, Brian said something earlier about the cell that I want to come back to. Let's see, newbies are going to think every story should be selling something they offer their audience, when in reality, most of your story should be educating your audience to guide them toward a sale later down the road. Just thinking out loud. Brian, that is true, and it is probably not a great term for this, but I want it to be clear that everything you write has to have somebody taking some action at the end. And it doesn't mean that they take action buying something. It doesn't even mean they sign up for a list, but what it could mean is that they take action in their lives. You know, if you inspire them to do something in their lives, then you have encouraged them to take that action. So to me, the sell is the persuasion. It is your ability to push them forward. So, yeah, some sort of conversion here is what we're talking about. That is exactly what that is where we're doing some sort of conversion. Okay, so let's get into these a little bit deeper and really understand these things. The hook. The hook is really pretty simple. The hook is why now, and it can be the first piece of the hook is why now. It can be related to the news, promotion, holiday season. Now, you can actually, I've talked about this before with you guys, but you can actually take a calendar and have a story idea for every day of the calendar based on the holidays, based on the season, based on your vacation, based on whatever you're doing. You can see what kind of story you're going to be writing every day, if you wanted to write every day. Our good friend Terry Dean, who is a great storyteller. If you're not on Terry's list, you need to be on Terry's list because he does emails that are great stories. He only does them about 3 times a week. But he writes his stories the week before based on the next week. Now, he knows what the purpose is of everything before he starts writing. But he can look at the calendar. It could be a marketing calendar. It could be a seasonal calendar. It could be whatever it is, a promotion, whatever. And he will write a story based on that. That could be the hook. We talked about this planning, the calendar planning. One of the things that I love is movies. And I'm a huge movie fan. I really wanted to be a filmmaker in a past life. And I got so far as to make a couple of small films as an assistant director and write some screenplays. But I didn't pursue it because I wasn't willing to make the sacrifice that's required to move to Hollywood and bang on doors. So that was not one of my that was one of my dreams that I decided to shift away from. But I love movies. So I go to movies and I watch for the hook. And I also watch for the parachute. I'm going to show you an example of a parachute in a minute. The first thing that gets the hook in a movie is immediate conflict. What is the conflict? There's got to be a piece of conflict in your story. And that can be that you have a situation that you need to resolve. And you're going against the grain. How do you resolve that situation? That's the piece. That's a big part of what a hook is. That gets people identified with it, gets them to empathize with it. That's the thing that gets them in and keeps them in. It can be done in a headline even. It's really important to understand that the headline is the thing that grabs them, and the first paragraph is the thing that keeps them. So you want your hook at the top of your story as much as possible. The setup, this is a dangerous place. The setup is the context. You're the star of your story, even if it's about somebody else. It's your perspective. You're the writer, so you can never avoid that. If you do, you're writing in third person, or you're writing in a disjointed, disconnected way, and people will not stay with you very long. If they do read it, and it's about somebody else, then they identify with the person that you've written about and not you. You're not building your relationship with those people. So in the context, what you want to do is paint the scene. This is really important. The context has to give people just enough to keep them going, but not so much that they understand completely what's going on. I like to say the context is like a snake. If you hold it too long, you're going to get bit. So don't do too much in the context area because that's just going to turn into a meltdown on you. You have to be really careful with context. I'll give you an example of that in a bit. Just enough to understand a little, but not so much you don't care to stay with the story. The reader doesn't care to stay with the story. So that's the problem with too much context. The parachute. I like to think in pictures. I like to look at pictures to kind of build my own idea. Now, we're going to do an example here and of a movie and these three pictures. And I'm going to ask you to write again. Take another 2 minutes and write down what you think the action is here. And that would be, you just kind of make up the parachute action. You kind of make up a little story background for each of these things. I'm not going to click on this because, well, I might. I think I will click on this and see if it comes up. It is a YouTube. I don't know if you know Clive Owen. Clive Owen is an actor. He's an action star. He's a British action star. And he is very popular now. But 10 years ago, when this video came out, he was very unknown. Let's see, that's BMW Clive. You can go to your own, do this on your own website to hear the sound if you want. and I'm going to stop talking for a second because it's probably going to take over the sound here for a second. Okay, right here. I put the link in the chat box here. It is nams.ws/BMW Clive. C-L-I-V-E. nams.ws/BMW Clive. About 10 years ago, maybe 12, could it be as much as 13 years ago, BMW was making short films to highlight their cars. And they were using Clive Owen as the star of all of these films, and they're directed by great directors. John Frankenheimer directed this one called The Ambush. It's a little seven and a half minute film. Here's 20 seconds into the film, and we're coming up on the last bit of the credits. So between 20 and 30 seconds, I want you to see what happens in this film, and this is a parachute, because in 10 seconds, the action is huge. And I'm going to let it run for about a minute and a half, and you'll see the action that takes place. And you know exactly what's happening here by watching it. But I'll comment a little bit on top of it. In the recording, you'll get the sound. I know that live, you don't get the sound here. But if you watch it as well, you'll see. So I'm just going to let it run. Right there, you see Clive Owen looking in his rearview mirror, and he sees lights behind him. That tells you there's action coming and there's a problem. Okay? We are 10 seconds into this movie. You're parachuted right into the action.
Who are they?
Bandits.
I don't know.
With a gun. Telling them to slow down. Guy in the back, they obviously want him. They put a laser on him. We're 54 seconds. So that is 30 seconds. You've got a lot of action already.
It's going to happen very quickly. If you deviate from my instructions, we will open fire. Your passenger is carrying
$2 million in uncut diamonds.
The deal was no questions asked.
Now I will count backwards from 10, and then you will slow your...
You understand the conflict within a minute and a half.
Nod your head if you understand me.
I'm not getting killed for your merchandise.
We're going to... Okay, the extenuating circumstance is the guy has swallowed the diamonds. So if they stop him, they will have to cut him open to get the diamonds.
Swallow them.
7.
The diamonds are inside of me.
6.
They will cut me wide.
So now they're counting down.
Please.
To the point where he has to stop.
3.
If you stop, you might as well kill me yourself.
Okay. Telling him to slow down.
Slow down.
And he says, buckle up. That's the transition. Buckle up.
Buckle up.
And now we see, at 2 minutes, all the action starts, and the BMW shows what it can do. I mean, it's an awesome little movie for 7.5 minutes. And all of these, I encourage you to watch all of these. So that's an awesome little movie. And I encourage you to watch all of those little BMW movies because they are... There are 7 minutes of how to tell a story. Incredible, fast stories. And, of course, there are action stories, and our lives are not full of action. But you can create action in your life that's not as violent or not as exciting, but it can be as engaging, and that's what you want to focus on. Okay? Now, what I want you to do with these three pictures below is take a look at these pictures like you did with the three columns below. I want you to take a look at these pictures. I'm going to give you 2 minutes again and write down quickly what you think's happening in each of these pictures. What's the action in each of these pictures? I hope you can see them well enough to write about them. So go ahead, write down, and then post it in the question box again what you think is the action is in these three pictures at the bottom. You guys are funny. Okay, so it's time. We might have cut that a little short, but it's okay. I'm going to go with Sherry's first. Sherry says the woman on the left is watching her child play football. A person who's never been on a farm has to feed the pigs. The woman is helping poor kids in a third world country, and they need money. Okay, and let's see. Up here at the top, Stan says that picture one, he's talking about this picture up here, is he's shifty looking as though he's hiding from someone. That's the guy in the car from the movie, so that's exactly what it is. He is shifty. He's looking in the rearview mirror and seeing what's going on. Let's see. Sandra says the picture of this is my wife here at the playoffs in Alabama, and they are winning, so this is such an exciting day for her. That's true. Sports event, Charlie says it's sports event, team did something good. The farming, being friends with animals is the middle picture, and tough times, taking care of kids with few resources is the third picture. Stan says in picture number two, that's this one for him, she's had good news. Number three is Appalachia, maybe during the Depression. From Teresa, that's this one. Yes. Brian says, the son just fumbled a football touchdown. The politician is trying to get a vote. That's number one. Here, son just fumbled a touchdown. I assume you mean recovered a fumble for a touchdown. And the politician is trying to get a vote by selling the pig on the bridge in her constituency. That's in this middle picture. And number three, just got the news that daddy has left to go west in that one. Okay, Brian, that is great. We'll talk about that in just a second. Sandra says, every day when I feed my pigs, I take the time to see how they're doing. That's the picture number two. Chris says, a woman at a football game watching her son, grandson, made a fantastic play for a major team. Man seeing, is that a pig? Can't tell. For the first time in his life and is fascinated. The third is a woman worrying about something in a dire situation. Okay. Let's see. Ute says, excitement, fun, winning game. Two is awesome, curiosity. All curiosity, preparing to act, scanning the scene. Three is wonder, despair, what's next? Sandra says in the third picture, in a war-torn city, we live in a huddled corner of the what is left of our living room. Okay, so the reason I wanted you to do this is because I love to take pictures and really kind of, in fact, I like to do this in life. Sometimes I'll sit at the airport when I'm flying, and I'll get there early, sitting at my gate, and I look at people and I watch them and make up stories about what they are doing and who they are with and who they are. And it's a little pastime, but it actually helps me with my writing, because I can look at pictures and actually see into those pictures and determine in my own mind a little movie, make a little movie of what's going on. And it doesn't have to be right. It just has to be the story that I'm making up. So, you know, Brian and Sandra actually were kind of imagining into these a little more. Brian, talking about somebody recovered a fumbled touchdown, recovered a football for a touchdown. That's the action that you don't see in this picture. All you really see is a woman who's very excited at a football game. The truth is, it's the game is finished and they've won, so she's very excited. But the story that Brian made up is got a lot of action, and it's got a hook. The woman has a son who's playing at the football game. That's great. A politician trying to get votes by selling the pig on a bridge in her constituency. That's a little bit out there, but it's a story that you've gone into, and this could be Animal Farm. So, you know, of course that could be true. And the last one is, just got the news that Daddy has left to go west. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Tell me that those 11 words don't paint a very engaging picture for you. Just got the news that Daddy has left to go west. That is a really good one sentence synopsis of a possible story there. I love that. So the reason that I like pictures for the parachute is because if you can see the action, create a paragraph about the action that you see in your mind, then you can get that in a story. And even though I've got it here in this pyramid as number three, it could be number one. In these BMW movies, the action is within the first 15, 20 seconds of every one of those movies. So that's the parachute starts out and really is the hook. The parachute can become the hook because it grabs you. Okay, we're going to the next slide here. Theme. We've talked about this some. The theme is the purpose. And if you don't have a clear purpose for why you want to do this story, it's going to cause you trouble, because you're going to meander all over the place and you may never get to a point. But having said that, sometimes I like to start writing to see where a story is going, and then I craft a purpose as I'm building it, or as I'm coming to a place in the story where it might be falling apart. It might be going in a different direction than I want it to. Sometimes I have to stop and say, okay, what's the purpose of this, and go back and refocus it. So it's never too late to build better focus and better purpose into your articles and your stories. If you don't have a purpose or a theme in this story, it's the quickest way to lose a reader. It is the quickest way to lose a reader by confusing them. So you always want to support point. If you remember the bad dad story on the sales page, we were supporting the point through those through that long sales letter all the way. And you also foreshadow with the theme. If you have a good theme point that can be encapsulated in a sentence or a couple of sentences, then you can always foreshadow to the solution by using that throughout your story, using different versions or touching it as you write, like you would a touchstone as you go through that story. It never should be far from the sentence that you're writing. The theme has always got to be close at hand, because the reader's got to know where you're going. And it needs to be subtle. Yeah, the Bad Dad sales letter again is at baddad, a It's bad-dad.com. It's bad-dad.com. And I'm putting it in the chat box for everybody. Okay. So, yes, Chris, you can go there anytime, take a look at it as a sample. Okay. Now we're going to talk about transition. Transitions are anytime you have a swing, a shift. Now, it can be the shift that I like to make sure that is every story, that is in every story, successful story, is from me to you. I want to be able to talk about my experience, and then I want to be able to adapt it to your situation. So I want to identify with you by telling you about my experience, and I want to tell you in such a way that you can pick up on it and say, oh, I really understand this, or I really feel this. Really feeling this is better than understanding. So we're going to talk about words in a minute and how to use the right words to make sure the feelings come across. You saw in the movie that I just showed you, the transition was buckle up. That was going from we got a situation to now we're going to a solution. And the solution was he's going to drive like a madman. And the subject of the movie needed to buckle up. So that two words was a great transition in that little movie. In my bad dad sales letter, it was more subtle as you went through the system. It was more about here's the problem, here's more of the problem, here is even more of the problem, and here's a possible solution that didn't work. And so I'm continually building you toward a solution that I'm kind of holding out there. You know it's coming because I've teased you with it. But at first I want you to hurt. First I want you to feel the pain that I feel. And then I want you to understand that it's your pain. So that's the transition that we're making in that sales letter. Sorry, hit my elbow there. King of pain. Then the sale, which Brian really pointed out very well, that this is a conversion. The purpose of the sale is to convert somebody, and it's not necessarily to convert them into purchasing a product. It's to convert them into a way of thinking, and to convert them into a relationship, and to convert them into signing up for your list, all of those things. It is your reason for doing this. It ties very closely with the theme of your story. So the sell is all about why they should take this action. That's what you're talking about in the sell. It is the hardest sell point that you will have in your article. It is, or your story. It is very much do this, do this, do this. I like to use bullet points. I like to use bold letters. I like to use headlines here. I tell the readers exactly what I want them to do in the cell. And this is also where we introduce the solution. So to take advantage of this, you need to get dump, bump, bump, bump. Pretty well laid out. Oops, went too far. The tie. You want to bring it back to the beginning. And we talked about this. The importance of doing this is that if you write stories that have a resolution to the problem, but you just drop them there, they kind of feel like, oh, this was all about selling something. And it's true. It is about selling something, whether it is your opinion or your point of view or the product. But if you bring it back to what the original problem was and how this solved that problem for you, then you're wrapping it up in a bow. And it feels like this is a conversation, and this was one way in this conversation that we resolved this issue. And it makes it much, much more palatable to people. So it becomes more revealing, more of that know, like, trust. It builds that trust better. So you want to reveal the story. You want to resolve the story, I mean. And I say here, don't get artsy. What I mean by that is You know, in movies, sometimes they have an ending where you walk away, you're just scratching your head and thinking, huh, I wonder what that meant. Or I wonder if they really got back together. Or I wonder if the guy died, really, at the end. Or I wonder if they're leaving that open for a sequel. To me, you don't want to do that with a closed-end story. Now, there are series, and Stan identified somebody earlier who's a great email marketer named Andre Chaperon. I don't know if I said that right. Maybe Ship. Is that how I... Let me just check this real quickly on the spelling. But Andre does... he does what he calls soap opera emails. And every one of them has kind of a cliffhanger ending. And they are great. He does a great job with that. But his purpose is to get you to the next one. So he has a very clear purpose for doing it the way he does it. And his purpose is to get you to the next email and to get you to engage with him completely. So that is a really good example. Let's see. Type out Andre's name. You know, actually, I will include Andre's link in here. I have his program, and I like it a lot. So I'll bring that back to you in the second part of this series, okay? Let's see. In the Thai, like I said, we revisit the suffering is, this is a saying that I love, suffering is inevitable, misery is optional. So suffering is inevitable, misery optional. That means that we all go through stuff in life, but if we go back to it over and over, you know, we're going to be miserable. You don't have to do that. So that is, that's what we do in the Thai back here. We don't dwell on the misery. We talk about the problem and the solution. Okay? Now we have another exercise for you. Download this this article. This was one written in the original workshop I did live in Atlanta on the on storytelling. And Ute, one of our students from Germany, was there, and she wrote this article about for her about page, and it is about herself. And I want you to use your template and identify the 7 steps in this article. And we may not have time to go through this today, but we will go through this when we meet again tomorrow. And you can go through this article, download it at this link, nams.ws/fungrandma. I'll put that link in the chat box. And there you'll get a PDF of this about page article that she wrote. She rewrote this several times based on what she learned in the workshop. It is all about her and how she came to this niche that she has called Fun, Fit, and Healthy Grandma. She's a really sweet woman to let me use this here, and I appreciate it, Ute. Thank you so much. But what we're going to learn from this is that she does not sell a product, to Brian's point earlier at the end. The action in the end of this is to invite you to enjoy her website. So if you sign up for her list, that's one of the desired actions. But she's not selling a product here in this about page. But the about page is written as a story. So be sure and download that and go through the template with it and do a little analysis. I encourage you to use that template to do a little analysis on all kinds of stories as you find them. But this is a good one for you to start with. Now, we're going to get into some grammar here and some writing style and all of that. Your writing style is your writing style. I don't care what your English teacher told you in high school. I don't care what Funk and Wagnalls said. I don't care what E.B. White, Writing Style book. He wrote that, and there's all kinds of rules we could follow with grammar. Don't get caught up in that. What you're doing is telling a story as you. I say here, if you're from the South, write with an accent. And I think you know what I mean. If you're from Prince Edward Island. You would write with colloquialisms from Prince Edward Island. If you are from Chicago, you might have some things that influence you from Chicago, such as Chicago blues, or maybe you are a maybe you really enjoy the Chicago Cubs. That's going to find a way into your writing a lot. Brian writes, "I'm Canadian, eh?" So that's Brian. He's got a Canadian accent. I can hear that in his voice now. He says things differently than I do. He uses words differently than I do, and he spells things differently than I do sometimes. That's okay. You want to focus on the words that matter when you write. So this is going to be a little hard for you to read. You'll have to look at this on the replay, I think, and I'll read it to you here. In the story that I referenced earlier that I wrote a couple of days ago about my brother who burnt our barn down when I was a kid, I wrote, "When my mother heard running water outside, she peeked through the window and glimpsed him running from the house to the barn with an empty can full of water. So he tried to put out the flames, quickly consuming the entire barn." The way I rewrote this is, "Hearing running water outside, Mom curiously peeked through the window, squinting to see him sprinting to the barn with an empty pork and beans can filled with sloshing water as he tried to douse the flames, quickly eating the barn from the bottom up." Now, the second one, I think, paints a better picture. The first part of that first paragraph, "When my mother heard running water outside," it's a very simple phrase, but it's long, and I think it doesn't get the point across fast enough for me, because I want the point to be that she saw him running to the barn. "Hearing running water outside," I think, moves it along faster. "She peeked through the window and glimpsed him running from the house. Mom curiously peeked through the window, squinting to see him sprinting to the barn with an empty pork and beans can filled with sloshing water." That is a little long and a little awkward still, and I probably would work on that a little bit more. But I went from my mother to Mom. That made it much more personal to me, from my mother to Mom. Now you know I'm talking about my mom. Peeked through the window is the same in both, but I added curiously because, which I'm not sure you need, because I wanted it to be that she didn't understand what she was going to find looking outside. I mean, you can imagine, you hear things all the time as a mother, but you're not sure what's going on until you see him sprinting. And I had glimpsed him running from the house. And I had here, "to see him squinting, to see him sprinting to the barn." That part, "to see him sprinting," is a little awkward. "Squinting, to see him sprinting to the barn." But it gets across what I'm trying to say is that he's flying. He's really running hard to the barn. And then the part where he has an empty can full of water, I said an empty pork and beans can, because we ate a lot of pork and beans. And I know the size of a pork and beans can, and you might know the size of a pork and beans can as well. Leaving an empty can full of water, it could have been a paint can, it could have been a 5-gallon can, it could have been a green bean can, it could have been anything. It could have been a tuna fish can. But when I say it's an empty pork and beans can, you know it's about 8 to 16 ounces of water. Sloshing water as he tried to douse the flames, eating the barn from the bottom up. The flames quickly eating the barn from the bottom up. I like that phrase, eating the barn from the bottom up. So if you look back there and you see flames from the bottom through the top of the barn, you know it's completely engaged. It's better to me than flames quickly consuming the entire barn. So you use words that really are more action and more filled with activity, with feeling, with a better picture, something that you can see in your head. Too many adjectives are going to be a problem, so it's really verbs that you want to focus on that give you the most effectiveness when you're trying to tell a story. So really go back and look at all of your verbs. Your verbs are the ones that you want to work on more than anything else. One of my favorite phrases from any of my writing is the heat hung like honey when you walked outside. And I wrote that in an article a few years ago, and I got more comments about that single phrase from people that they loved that phrase, the heat hung like honey when you walked outside. That told you that it was incredibly hot and sticky. So if you can, the heat hung like honey is what I'm saying. And you want to paint a picture that tells people what's going on. That's the purpose of our storytelling and the reason we really focus on these, the words, not the grammar. So the grammar can be, I mean, you can have partial sentences, you can create it any way you want, you can use colloquialisms, but you really want to focus on the words that you use. Okay. Yeah, Sandra says, if you lived in southern Florida, you know how that feels, heat hung like honey. Yeah, it's pretty common. Okay, Terry Dean, I mentioned him earlier. Terry says what's in a story is entertain, educate, and earn. And those three things are really important. Terry is big on the earn, and that is where you would, Brian, where you would get a little disagreement, that you always need to get people going to purchase something or to get on your list or to take a profitable action. I think there's a little leeway there because you're still building that relationship and you are moving people toward that. You're always moving people toward that, but you don't necessarily have to accomplish it in one fell swoop. For example, email autoresponder series, I think, need to have three or four of the non-sell communications before you go into the product sales. That's the way I like to build them because that helps build that know, like, and trust. Terry says that all three of these are contained in a really successful story. And over time, I agree with that. They all need to entertain. They all need to educate. But they all will eventually need to earn because you are in business. If you're doing an online business, you are in business. So they all need to lead to an earn. Boredom is your enemy. Attention span is your editor. If you get lost reading your own material, then your reader will too. So pay very close attention to what you are doing when you're reading. If you're wandering off into something else, then you need to go back and reread that. Okay, read out loud. That's a very key thing to do. When you write something, read it out loud. The way it sounds is completely different than the way it is in your head when you're reading it because you fill in the blanks when you read and you hear it in your head. You fill in the blanks for the errors that you make when you're writing. When you read out loud, it's impossible to do that. You'll get hung up. And that's a really good thing to know is where your reader is getting hung up because your reader is not filling in the blanks. Okay, so we're coming to your assignment for today, and you come back tomorrow. You're going to submit your assignment. You're going to submit your writing sample at nams.ws/story-sub. This is for the people on this live call only. If you are listening to this later, you can submit it here if you want. I'm not guaranteeing that I will review it, but I can guarantee you it won't be reviewed on live on the webinar live if you're listening to this later. So if you are on this call live, I want you to write a story today. It can be a short story. It can be 200 to 400 words. That's not very much. Don't spend a lot of time on the topic. Just start writing it. Figure out what your purpose is and use your template to complete it. I want you to write the story and complete the template and submit both of those together at nams.ws/story-sub. nams.ws/story-sub. If you want some samples, you can pick up your samples at the nams.ws/story-samples. That is a PDF that I have with a bunch of writing in it that are story samples that were pretty successful for me. You'll find that some of those are written stories. Some of those some of those are selling stories. They're all written. Some of them are selling stories, and some of them are not selling stories. So you'll see an example of multiple ways of writing stories there. Some of them are very long. Some of them are very short. So you can do whatever you want to do there lengthwise. We will review it tomorrow online live. So please do that. Spend a little time this afternoon. I'd encourage you to do it within the next hour or so that you don't forget this and so that you get it done based on what we have created. So yes, you're going to use the template, the blank template that you downloaded earlier. That was nams.ws/st1. And I'll put that in here again to make sure that you got it. The blank template was nams.ws/st1. And that is, I want you to fill that out with all of the pieces, all of the parts of your story, so that you can show me how you created that story and what the parts are. And then we'll review it and talk about it tomorrow. Does this make sense? Let's see, Brian, you say, when I write copy, I generally use Dragon Dictate because the way we speak is more in tune with storytelling than just typing it out. That's true. But I tell you, Brian, I've had really difficult time using Dragon Dictate because I don't write the way that I talk. A lot of people say that you should write exactly as you talk. I like to clean it up some. So getting that first draft out is always good. But you certainly will want to go back and reread it. Maybe it's just because I'm not so good with Dragon Dictate. But that could be just me. And the other thing is I type so fast. I type faster than I actually talk. So believe it or not. Okay, so Sandra, yes. Chris, yes. My stories are far better if I write than speaking them, Chris says. I'm in your camp, Chris. Let's see. Stan said that last link did not go to a hyperlink. It's because I typed it in wrong. Sorry. nams.ws/st1. There's your hyperlink. That's your download. Okay, yes. So now we are, you have an assignment, and we're going to come back tomorrow at 10 o'clock and review all these elements for a couple of hours. We'll also have some additional ones to review. Start with the theme and then fill in the other elements. That's correct. Start with the theme, fill in the other elements. Figure out a topic that you want to write about, and you can start with a concept, a story concept, because you can almost adapt any story concept to your purpose. You just have to know what your purpose is and know what your story concept is and then build it together, okay? Will the replay of this session be available? It should be available by the end of the day, so that's true. Any questions? Any confusion? Anything we need to go over again? You're also welcome to put in here any feedback, anything you need we need to check. Okay, story samples. Let me check that, Teresa. I'll make sure that that link is good in a few minutes. She says that story samples goes to a 404 error. Would somebody check that on their computer other than Teresa to make sure that that's true? Because I thought I'd check that this morning. Tomorrow's session is at the same time. Stan says that he picked up that download just fine, Teresa. So I think you might have typed it in wrong. Maybe click on that link I put in the thing there. Okay. Yep. I will read this note that you put in there for me, Charlie. I'll read it later. Okay, good. Yeah, the link is good, Teresa. Thank you so much for checking that. Anything else? Everybody understands their assignment? Tell me who's coming back tomorrow with their... make a commitment to me now. You're either going to not be able to get the assignment back tomorrow or you are going to be able to get the assignment back. Put it in the question box. Yes, you will be here to review it. Okay, good. Good. Looks like everybody's going to submit their art, their story, and we're going to go over it tomorrow. Good job. I will be talking to you guys tomorrow. And don't forget to go over the sample that I gave you on the fun grandma and dissect that one on your own. And we'll talk about that first thing in the morning before we review yours. Okay? Thank you so much.